honestly, the last November, December was, it was horrendous, because one of our key marketing terms is we're the number one fragrance brand on Trustpilot ever. We're the highest. We're the best. That's, there's no one else. All of a sudden, we're the worst reviewed fragrance brand on Trustpilot within a month. Within a month.
It takes only one breach, one single click to take down your entire business. Imagine your life's work gone like that. Cybercriminals know this, and they're targeting companies like yours every single day of the week. Nostra's CloudShield 365 is built to stop them. With Microsoft Business Premium, advanced threat detection, and 24/7 monitoring, we protect your data, your people, and your bottom line. Don't leave it to chance. Visit nostra.ie today. That's nostra.ie today, and see how CloudShield 365 keeps your business safe. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code VOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code VOX20 and elevate your marketing game today.
Connor, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Delighted you made the journey down to join us.
Yes, all good.
How is life?
Life's busy. Busy. Very busy.
What's keeping you busy?
Anything and everything. Business, kids, family.
Yeah. Okay, we'll start with business. What do you do?
I own a company called The Jack Group. We are an e-commerce holding group. We have three e-commerce brands and a 3PL.
Okay. Break down. What are the brands? I think people will be very familiar with some of them.
The Essence Vault, Thompson Carter, and Liquid London.
Okay. So start with the Essence Vault. I think a lot of us are going to be familiar with that. What is it?
Essence Vault is designer-inspired fragrance that lasts a lot longer than most others in the price range.
Designer-inspired fragrance.
Designer-inspired fragrance.
I like that. What does that mean?
That's the legal term. fragrance is by designer brands. In our inspiration, I
there
suppose.
You go. Nice. Yeah. I think everyone knows what you're talking about. Dupes, as the kid might say. Yeah. So how'd you start that? Because it's quite an unusual idea.
Yeah. I mean, that was the first brand that came before everything else. I've always loved fragrance. Like 12 years old, I had a bottle of CK1 in the blazer pocket. I sweat it profusely. In school, we had a light sky blue t-shirt or light sky blue shirt. And I would have sweat it through it every single day. So because of that, always had fragrance, always had perfume on me. And then fast forward to university, I spent 3 years over in Liverpool, doing criminal justice as my degree, and just by chance, one of our flatmates was he had a chemical sort of chemistry degree. One of his modules was in perfumery, and I think that was the sort of the penny drop of, can you actually make perfume? And obviously Liverpool has a big Saturday market sort of industry, there's a few cheaper perfume sellers there, and always bought from it. It was terrible. Left me in rashes, and I was like, oh, maybe it can't be made outside of these big companies. And then fast forward another few years, eventually tried making it, spent 16,000 on a credit card, and just as the limit got hit, I got it right.
Okay. What was your idea?
It was just, first of all, it wasn't even for a business. It was just to make perfume myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Just to do it, like?
Just to do it, yeah. Just intrigued to see if it could be made. I tried to make it myself for well over a year and just couldn't get it right. It was either too greasy, didn't last, didn't smell anything like it was supposed to. and eventually got it right. And even then, you know, I used it and, you know, got compliments. I was like, oh, you smell amazing. What is it? Obviously said the real, the designer was supposed to be. And then just sort of thought to myself, right, well, what about selling this at Saturday markets in person? And we did that for about 4 months, just at Saturday markets selling. The first one went okay, you know, but perfumes were still, at that stage, the essence of it was mainly wax melts, candles, that sort of thing. But
oh, perfumes, you were already up and running, were you?
No, but that, it was easier to make them with fragrance than it was with perfumes.
Ah, I get you. Okay.
But I still didn't think perfumes were going to be like the intriguing part of what was on the table. I thought it was going to be the wax melts.
Okay, so that was your first kind of product, was actually wax melts and candles.
Yeah, and then the first market we did, we had three or four perfumes in the corner of the table, and like everyone bought them and no one touched the wax melts, which take fucking so much longer to make, by the way.
Really?
Done that market, made 100 quid, was absolutely over the moon. That's all it was supposed to be, was the odd Saturday market and a sell amongst friends. And then we went to our second market, and it was a big one up north. Had to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, got there for about 4:30. We sold £3 all day, £3.
Of the melts?
One melt, one wax melt all day. So it was that. I said to myself, I was like, fuck it, I'm not doing that anymore. Can you swear? Is that okay?
Yeah, you can swear away.
I was like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. This is terrible. Products are awful. And then we had one more market booked, which was the Christmas market in Ballymena, which is my hometown, and we sold out within an hour. Had to get on the phone to my dad. I was like, get in there and make some perfume. We've sold out.
That's wild. What do you think the difference was, or just luck, or what do you think it was?
The Saturday markets are a really weird in-depth space as well. So you'll have your Saturday, the carpet markets, where everyone's just looking at deal.
Yeah.
And we're coming in there, still very, very cheap, but not as cheap as the guy beside us selling three bottles of perfume for a fiver. You know, we're £15 a bottle.
Right.
So we all of a sudden looked like the big expensive brand there. Whereas we went to, the next one was an artisan market. So you had to physically make the product to be in that market.
Okay, I got you.
You know, so then we're being compared to a £100 painting, you know, and it's like, oh, that's a really, really good deal.
That's a big learning, isn't it? Like just framing and where you position yourself is so important. 100%.
Like. And I still to this day say, like, the key to the essence of success was the customer feedback that we've seen instantly. Mm. You know, it wasn't, we have to try and get buyers, we have to get survey them afterwards. It was, if you came to the table, what were you looking at? What do you think? What do you lift first? What do you smell? What's your initial reaction? All of that played in to where, Joe, the initial branding was terrible to what it is now. And we changed that based on how many people came up to us, what they left. And that was incredibly eye-opening. Do you know?
When was this?
This was just before COVID. So this would have been September 2019.
Okay, so it's not long really. No. That is not long. And then what was the next step? Like what after that, the Ballymena market, like what were you like, or what are we going to do here?
Well, that obviously Christmas, there was no markets, you know, so we booked in as many as we could. So January, February, and they were going good, really consistent every weekend. And then COVID hit, you know, and that shut everything down. So we had a website at that time, but it was mainly just for people to use after they visited us at a market, you know. So didn't know Facebook ads, didn't know online marketing. The website was dreadful. And we sent an email on the week after COVID shut everything down, and we done more revenue within 10 minutes than we did the previous 6 months.
Whoa.
And that got the ball.
So you collected some emails off existing customers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when COVID hit, you're like, hey, look, we're going to go online.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. It's a funny sliding doors, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So you hadn't really intended to be like, oh, this D2C cool brand.
I don't even think D2C was a term back then, even though it was only a couple of years ago. Even at that stage, like, obviously you're using Instagram and Facebook and you see the ads, you assume that they're all fake. You assume dropshipping is a scam. And then the other ads are the high street brands, the retail brands. There's no, at that time for me, there was no real online, like online brands hadn't hit that sort of scale they are at now. Do you know?
Fair, yeah. COVID was a big accelerator, wasn't it?
Yeah.
COVID
yeah.
really, because you didn't have a choice. And everyone's online all the time anyway. Yeah. You had no real choice of like, I kind of have to buy from online.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, so much more things go through your head. It's like, oh, you can't be within 2 meters of anyone. Mm. Why do you need perfume?
It's a little luxuries, though.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
still need to feel human. So what, like, explain then to me the next kind of 6 to 9 to 12 months, because it's a huge business now and we're not that far in the future. So bring me back to 2020. Like, how did you, after that first email, what did you do? Like, what was your thought process?
Very haphazard. You know, it's COVID. You don't want to plan too far ahead because you don't know what's happening then. You know, you don't really have a good supply chain because you only sell one day a week on thingy. But yeah, we, friends and family, obviously we're all not working, you know, so they were on furlough. They worked with that, worked with me. At that stage, it was still just myself, no other employees. So within 2-3 weeks, we had 30 staff. yeah, through people being furlough and stuff like that. And
you were making it then and shipping it, like what were they all doing?
Yeah, pretty much just everything like that. We were making it. At that stage, I wouldn't let anyone else make it. I was like, no, I have to do it a special way. But obviously, as the business grows, you quickly get that off. But yeah, it was mainly for the next 6 months. I was just buying stock every single day.
And what was the growth? Like, what are we talking about here in terms of like revenue and stuff like that? Like, what, you went from like selling like a couple at the market to like selling a few to selling what?
In the April, COVID hit in the March. In the April, we did about 100 grand in the month.
Oh my Lord.
November, we did 800 grand in November. And it could have been 100 times bigger because obviously COVID, all the ethanol was being used for hand sanitizer. We couldn't get our hands on ethanol. We couldn't make stock. We were literally opening the website Saturdays and Sundays, shutting the website on the Sunday night, filling all the orders all week, and then starting back up on Saturday. That was going.
You had to close your website.
We had no stock. Do you know, we didn't even know I didn't know stock management. I didn't know what stock we had. We were literally just completely eyeballing it every weekend, hoping that we didn't sell out.
But this is incredible because, like, how did you mentally process this to doing a few quid at the market stall, doing 100 grand to doing 800 grand in the space of a year?
You don't have time to process it. Do you know, you don't process it.
Really?
Because, you know, there's a million things that, you're pushed into this new environment that obviously there's COVID going on. You can't even go into Tesco's. You know, you physically just, and in my opinion, for me at the time, you just do it. You don't know. You now all of a sudden don't know any different. You know, you can't plan for the next week.
Really fast. Your brain just adapted to it really quickly.
Yeah, because the only course I done at that stage was Start and Scale by Founder. You know, so it took a lot of sort of wins from that, you know, how to set up your email flows. Didn't know what Klaviyo was then. Installed Klaviyo, set up the flows. You know, sales go up again. You're like, fuck, all right, can't even do the next module. Sort that out, get back to normal, hire another 5 people. Next module's Facebook ads, right? Do Facebook ads. Fuck, sales are up again, right? Try and catch up, put the whatever operations you have in place, try and put them up. And then it was literally the next module. And then you put that in and then happened again. Do you know?
It was wild.
It was.
Do you think it was a perfect storm of COVID and
obviously
online
in
shopping and everything?
In hindsight, you've got like obviously your CPMs on Meta, like they were £1, you know, whereas, you know, nowadays they're 6-7. Well, in the UK for us, 6-7 quid. In the States, they're 25 quid. Do you know, they're £1. Do you know, we had one ad and it was ripped from one of our competitors and it was black and white checkers with a bottle from Canva on it. And 10% off in the corner. That was the only ad we ran like 6 months.
Yeah. And how much business did that bring in?
Well over £1-2 million quid. It was literally it was the only ad we had in the ad account. And
this is wild.
Literally turn it off on the Sunday, turn it back on Saturday morning.
There's people at home that scream and pulling their hair out going, I've got 100 ads and none of them performing.
at that stage, like again, if we had enough stock, we could have been, you know, at least 6-7 times bigger today if we were able to take that demand forward, which we just couldn't.
So how have you grown Essence Vault then? Because obviously you did an unbelievable start and you kind of layered on. What have been the kind of growth levers you've continued to pull?
I think a big hack for us is the fact that we're consumable. You know, so the fact that our recurring customers are so high, you know, 50% daily our break is 50-50, you know, 50% new, 50% returning.
Wow. And why is it so high?
Because we obsess about the product. You know, every single product we launch, you know, my brother, the rest of our staff, we're the ICP. We love fragrance. You know, so if we don't love that, it's not being released.
Okay.
You know, so if anything goes above a 1% return rate on the website, it's off and it's reformulated. It's back on. As soon as it hits over one, it's done. And that's, we really, really obsess over that.
How have you learned so much so fast? Because I mean, even that, like if it goes over 1% return rate, like 4 or 5 years ago, you were only getting started. Like how have you learned to be that ruthless and that savvy?
To us, it's nothing special. You know, it's again, and we learned this the hard way because we launched a brand that we weren't the ICP for, which was a skincare brand. And we shot it after a year because it just didn't work. And then in hindsight with that, you think, right, well, I wasn't the customer. I wasn't the customer. I didn't know what the pains were. I didn't know what the solutions, how to portray the solutions properly. Whereas with fragrance, the Essence Vault's sole purpose is that fragrance has to last, and it's bought cheaper than what they're used to. Do you know, that's the two things. There's no other ICP. It's people want cheap fragrance, people want it to last long. That's the, anyone that buys a fragrance around £20-30, it doesn't last. And we broke that barrier.
Okay. And where did you find your customers? Was it Meta, TikTok? Where did you find the new customers and how did you keep growing at such a rate?
Initially it was Facebook. So we were Facebook only for a few years. Obviously with email marketing, you know, pop up on the website, blah, blah, blah. And that strung us over for a year, 2 years. And then when TikTok came about, we were, I think, third in the UK to test TikTok ads. Because for us, it was like, right, well, that's the next stage of growth, is that secondary sort of, you know, different ad set, different eyes. And we knew it was a bottomless bit of opportunity because everyone else would be like, the ROAS, what's the attribution? Or we just know, right, let's just fire money at it, get the learnings, and then apply them and do the same thing again and again. And don't get me wrong, you know, we tend to push too hard, but the silver lining of that is, well, we learn what went wrong when we push too hard, so then put them in place, and then the next time we push, it's 10% better, 5% better, and it allows us to scale.
So you're willing to fail fast, you're willing to put skin in the game, fail fast, apply the learnings, go again.
Yeah, I think today's culture in most companies, that doesn't happen. Mm. You know, it's all about, right, let's go on a call, let's have, you know, 50 staff for the same jobs that 3 or 4 people can do, not as well, but a lot faster. Mm. And there's so many times where we put preparation and effort into, I don't know, landing pages, and we think, all right, well, let's test it and run it. Whereas if we just put it in play, if it works, brilliant. If it doesn't work, we need to find out why it didn't work. What was it? Was it the add to cart rate was lower? Do we need to push the add to cart button up? Was it not resonating with customers? Did this bundle not help? What was the CAC on this bundle rather than that bundle? We just do it fast.
So you experimenting with everything? Like, are you continually experimenting every day with different things?
100%, yeah, yeah. Even today, like we've for Thompson Carter, we've just redone all the PDPs.
What's PDP?
Product pages for all the products, because AOV is not as high as we want it. You know, so we just do it and see, get the week, 2 weeks of data and analyze it. Right, what can we change? What can we improve? Do we need to set it back? Do we need to, I don't know, again, push the add a cart button up or add Apple Pay to the product page. It's all them wee things that we know we can tweak, but just doing it is saves us a lot of time and money.
How have you learned this? Like, how have you learned to be this savvy this quickly?
I don't know. In my opinion, there's no secret sauce. Do you know, it's, you know, I think a lot of people think they need to improve by, first of all, look at themselves and go, right, well, we need to improve. What courses can I get? What books can I read? And that's, of course, the right first step. But then after they finish that book, it's like, right, okay, what's the next book I can read? Well, fucking implement something, you know, do something. Every time we take a course, we don't pass the first module before implementing what's in that module, or we don't implement anything because it hasn't, you know, doesn't sound as good as what it should be. But as soon as we get that golden nugget, it has to go into play. There's no reason why you invest in a course or invest in a book and then not do anything with it.
So your gap between knowledge to action is minimal.
Minimal, yeah. Very minimal. To the point where we're almost so careful that we don't overanalyze knowledge. Do you know, we don't need to absorb so much knowledge to the point where you then cause that decision paralysis and then you don't know, like, fuck, well, this course says to do this course says to do that. Yeah. It's weird. Yeah.
The more you know it, the more you don't know. Yeah.
100%, you know, and I think that's a big, I suppose that is a secret sauce, is knowledge is nothing without the implementation and vice versa. You know?
100%. It's the whole thesis of this podcast. That's what I try to talk to people about, is that it's just that experimentation phase. Like it's life is funny sometimes. Like literally 3 hours ago, we had a person sitting in that chair and she started at the markets.
Yeah.
She started selling sushi at the markets. Wow. And it's mad that you come in today and you're like, yeah, and just total coincidence. Very similar story to you, just did it. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of very similar. She goes, I don't know how I just got on with it. Just had to. There was no other alternative. But like, that is explosive growth in any business. Like, you know, especially from going from the market stall. So you're going from like, say, a grand a week to like 800 grand in November. So bring me back to like that November. As the dust settled, like what was your thought process? Like, what were you going, right, next year we're going to do X, Y, Z?
Honestly, for 5 years, next year was never, like when someone asked me, oh, well, what's happening next year? I almost winced. I was like, no, I need to get through December. I need to get through the next week. That was never, forecasting was a banned word for so long.
Really?
CFO will hate that, but I didn't want to see a forecast because, you know, one single thing fucks that forecast up. You know, do we buy too much stock, which we have done in the past because we've looked at the forecast, whereas if we just take it day by day, we can work a lot better. You know, and that forecast is obviously put in place to help you manage funds. You know, do we need to lend? You know, do we not need to lend? But when we did that, we ended up, we bought far, far too much stock because, you know, and for one way or another, it puts us in a really bad place because we tried to do the normal thing.
Okay.
Do you know?
So how do you, what's your thought? What's your philosophy then?
Philosophy, we always try and go against the grain. Do you know, whether that's take CAC, for example. So CAC, cost to acquire a customer for us, for years using different agencies, it was always, right, well, how do we get CAC lower? Whereas when we flipped it and said, right, well, if CAC currently is 18 quid, how do we cope at 23 pounds, 24 pounds, 25 pounds to acquire a customer? How do we get there? Not how much more do we have to put into creatives to try and get CAC down? Because everyone's trying to get CAC down. Every agency says, oh, we'll slash your CAC in half in 50 days, 30 days. Why? Why not add more products? Why not add different products? Why not expand into different categories? Because now you can all of a sudden shrug off 25 quid CAC, you know, whereas other companies are struggling at 18 quid. Time goes by, it's now 20 quid, whereas they're charging the same amount for the product. There's competitors in that space now, and they're trying to get it down to 15, but they can't cope at 18. Right. Whereas we're trying to be able to say, right, well, how do we get to 25? How can we acquire a customer for the most amount? How can we cope to acquire a customer for the most amount of money possible? Not how little can we acquire them for?
So going from a scarcity mindset to an abundance mindset.
Absolutely.
How can we be the best, and how can we like dominate the market and live at the higher cost? Kind of like the worst case scenario, right? You're like, in worst case scenario, we are acquiring up 25 quid. Are we still okay?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's when we started thinking like that, everything else of us becomes a lot easier, because you don't have a team of five people doing copywriting on your website. So, you know, you move away from that to just testing really, really quickly on different messaging, different AOVs, different price points, but you've still saved them wages. So now all of a sudden, you can already cope at a £22, £23 CAC, but you've hired them five people to try and get CAC down to 15 quid. Do you know? So it's
a false economy. Yeah.
False economy is right. Do you know where then all of a sudden, what's the side effects of a massive team calls? What happens on a call? You have 20 people on a call. Do they get paid by the hour? Yes. So now all of a sudden, the calls are around discussing how to be more efficient on media. You're now being less efficient on staff. You're now being less efficient on efficiency. You're now wasting time. You're now deliberating on stuff. And you're doing the exact opposite of what you're trying.
How many people are you at now?
270.
How many?
270.
I thought I misheard you the first time.
270.
That is wild.
Yeah.
But how have you kept that mentality of the bootstrapped, hungry founder, which is literally coming off you in spades?
I don't know.
Because you're still at that hustler's mindset. You still have that like, you're thinking of the wrong thing over here. You're looking at this when you should be looking at that. Like, you have such clarity and such, I heard you talk actually, I think it was at Ecom Live, and you had such surety and clarity over your, what you were doing and your purpose. It's like that thing of like, you know, indecision kills worse than the wrong decision. Whereas you have that, like, this is what we're doing. This is where we're going. So how have you kept that with honestly explosive growth? Like,
I think not a personal mindset thing, but I think just the mindset that, you know, you enjoy what you do, you know? So it's like, and I don't find enjoyment out of the revenue figures. It's like, it's them wee wins. You know, if we're launching a new product, the community page on Facebook, the customers love it. That's the win. You know, it's not the revenue numbers. It's, as a side effect, obviously the revenue numbers happen, but it's right, well, what engagement do we have? What are we doing to increase that engagement? What, you know, the conversion rate optimization, it's the ideation there that myself and the team love. Do you know, it's, you know, I don't know, our current cost to fulfill an order is £2. If we fix something, do we get it down to 180? You know, and I suppose it's just loving that efficiency and I suppose.
How do you get people bought into that as you get bigger? Like, how do you communicate to all 270 going, look, we think a little bit differently here. We're going to think in experimentation. We're going to think in speed. Like, how do you get that into such a large group?
You fuck up. You know, you do. And that's literally it. You know, last year we went bankrupt for the second time in our 5 years by fucking up, you know, and that again, we, around November time last year, pushed too hard at the start of the month. We had this massive revenue number in our head. We created the pressure on ourselves by having massive teams. Not when I say 270, that's not a massive team. I mean more like working with loads of agencies, you know, five or six creative agencies, because you have to pump creative in to get the CAC lower. That deliberation causes this pressure to hit this revenue number because you've got debt, because you need to hit the revenue. You know,
I know what you mean. It's self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. You know, so we, around halfway through November, we realized like we fucked it here. We were creating demand. We weren't generating the profits that we needed. And then come Black Friday, we're 5 or 6 days behind shipping. We're getting absolutely slated on Trustpilot, TikTok, the things that we love about the business.
You couldn't ship fast enough, or what was the issue?
We couldn't ship fast enough, but not the team couldn't not ship fast enough. The team were doing everything they could, but we had, you know, we were we're used to 2,000 orders, 3,000 orders a day. We're doing 7,000 orders a day.
Right. So you're kind of trying to cram like this much through this much of a pipe. It just doesn't go.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Do you know? And that's when you start losing the employee buy-in. You're losing that sort of atmosphere that got you there because you're trying to hit this revenue figure. Whereas if you just ask yourself, why the fuck are you trying to hit this revenue figure? You go, I don't know. And then all of a sudden it's like,
that's cool.
Why are we doing it? You know, so, and then Black Friday comes. We do 35,000 orders on Black Friday. A storm hits the boats on the Friday night. We lose 30,000 orders. Gone.
What happened?
Just missing. They load onto a lorry at us. 2 days later, 3 days later, they're not at the courier site. Gone. Because obviously afterwards we find out when the storm hits, the boats get cancelled. But then when the boats come back on, we just assumed, great, the lorries go onto the new boats. But because perishable goods get first priority, all of a sudden perishable goods come first. And that backlog just sits there, you know, because they need to renegotiate how to get it on the next boat. But the next boat also has two lorries of your parcels on it already. So it's like, right, well, does this stay here and the next two go on, or does this go and this gets delayed? But we didn't know that. So we didn't know what was, we didn't.
I'd imagine it's very hard.
It was literally sitting on the side of the road in Belfast. But courier company didn't know. We didn't know.
It's in that limbo land.
Limbo land is right.
How did you find out?
We just literally, it fixed itself. Someone decided, oh, there's a lorry sitting on the side of the road. Then they go back into movement with customers. We've already replaced a lot of the orders because customers are obviously fuming. But then, of course, by replacing the orders, we're adding to the orders that we're already struggling with. And that's it. That was honestly, the last November, December was a fucking minefield. It was horrendous because one of our key marketing terms is we're the number one fragrance brand on Trustpilot ever. We're the highest. We're the best. There's no one else. All of a sudden, we're the worst reviewed fragrance brand on Trustpilot within a month.
And that's wild because totally beyond your control, but people don't really care because, well, why should they? How are they going to know it's on the side of the road and it's not your fault?
That's it, you know. But at the same time, we just can't turn off orders now because even though we did it in COVID and that's what worked.
Different time.
We've got a revenue target to hit.
We've got
payroll to hit. You know, when it's like just cycling over, whereas, you know, we've also got 1.5 million in fragrance oil sitting because we expect it to be able to do all of this demand and more. Do you know, when it's like you can plan it until the cows come home. Do you know, you can plan everything, you can role play it, but until it happens and then bricks start falling off left and right and then they take more time, then all of a sudden what you thought the staffing and the space, you could do 10,000 orders a day and that becomes 7, that becomes 6, but the order numbers keep going from 12 to 14. You know,
it's a good problem, but still a problem.
Very, very good problem, but still a problem. But even in that time, it's like, you know, it's sort of the time where you have to bury your head in the sand, you know, because nothing is going to fix itself right now. You know, so we got over that. And then January, February hit and, you know, still doing terribly. Our lenders wouldn't, you know, lend us anymore. We literally, you know, we were 6-7 weeks late for payments and some suppliers. Lucky enough, suppliers were understanding fine. We made massive team changes in March. Removed all the agencies, bar two agencies, and took paid media in-house again. And we've had four months since March, record revenue months or record profit months since then. Yeah.
So what do you put that down to?
Going back to, again, that's that sort of that mindset of, right, well, what worked before, or, you know, that knowledge thing. It's like, right, well, for me, we did paid media. I done paid media myself at the very, very start. I knew paid media. I knew how to run ads on Facebook, TikTok. But, you know, chatting to the CFO, I was like, I don't know how to do it at this scale. I don't know how to manage at this scale. I don't know. Do you know? And I turned around to him. I was like, right, well, what's the least revenue per month we could do fine with the amount of expenditure? And he's like, he says a figure. I'm like, right, I can do that. That's, if I don't do that, it's fucking embarrassing. Do you know? But literally within a month, we had, April was the first full month, and it was rocky. And then just, we really, really honed in on the sort of the financial metrics, you know, our attribution. We created our own sort of conversion conversion multipliers based on attribution and platforms, and just literally from, it's not this every day, but literally say Thursday we lost £2,000 a day. On the Friday we made £29,000 just by the changes.
Wow.
From going towards this new formula that we've managed in house. We separated, obviously we've got three brands. We separated every brand with every country and gave each country its own order targets, AOV targets, revenue targets, margin targets. And that really showed us where the opportunity was and where it wasn't. Do you know, where are we pushing too hard, right? The Essence Vault's pushing too hard in the UK, pull back, go down south. Ireland's doubled every month since March. Do you know, whereas we were doing 40,000 a month back last year, we're doing, Ireland will hit £600,000 this month. Do you know, and that's from nowhere.
Wow.
Do you know, and we wouldn't have known that without having this really, really old fashioned sort of, it's literally a fucking Google sheet. It's not anywhere. It's in a Google sheet that gets updated manually at midnight every night.
There's even a process that I've a mentor in London in the content space, and he's got me doing that every Monday morning, filling a content sheet out. I have to do a scorecard every Monday. Unbelievable. I was doing it monthly, and I was like, just looking at every month. He goes, weekly. Email it to me every Monday.
And it's weird, but it's like, every time I show someone this sheet, it's like, oh, I can do this.
I can build you a dashboard.
I can build you this.
I don't want a dashboard. No.
This is how I can see where we need to improve.
It's a feature. It's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah.
It's the manual process of me sitting down every Monday and filling it out, going, ooh, that's weird. Mm-hmm. You know, we can automate too much.
Yeah.
In the world of AI, we can automate too much.
Another feature, not a bug, is literally, you know, if the person gets it wrong when they're updating it, the next day I'm like, that's wrong. I know how much we spend on Google in France daily. Yeah. You know, I know if it looks wrong, but I wouldn't have known any of that beforehand. Like, I remember October last year, we lost £600,000 in Switzerland. Revenue looked strong. ROAS looked strong. Returns were 10 times more in Switzerland than any other country, because Switzerland's got its own customs, border, delays. Swiss customers are a little bit more upfront about delays and them sort of things. So refunds were a lot higher. We lost £600,000.
Wow.
Do you know? And
that's astronomical.
Again, we didn't know that, because everything else looked a-okay.
Right.
Whereas the loss in Switzerland was then making us think, oh, the European countries aren't doing as well as what we think. When it wasn't, they were fine. It was Switzerland.
The devil is the detail, knowing exactly on a micro level. What's working? Because obviously you've said something there really interesting, which is like bringing it back in-house and being kind of granular. Then on a broader scheme, what's working for you now in 2025? Like, what are the kind of key things you're looking at going, yeah, Instagram ads are working, or TikTok shop, or what is it? What are the key things driving you?
Being very, the big term at the minute is creatives. You know, it's all this, the new meta update, as Andromeda, or the way the AI of Facebook ads works. That's all about, it's a content engine now. It's the content as the audiences, the content, or the creative as the audience. It's everything. Joe, you know, so it's off the back of that, agencies, creative agencies will say, you need 10,000 ads per month to be able to spend £1 million a month on Meta. Again, we've went very intentional with that. And so instead of so much broad content or creatives, it's now just really, really, really good content, really in depth. Whether it be high production or statics, everything goes through a very, not strict process, but if it's not good enough, it doesn't even get launched. It has to be good enough to launch. You know, so it goes against another, goes against that sort of, let's throw everything at it and, and see what sticks. It has to be very, if we spend something, it has to be intentional.
You know? What kind of stuff is working now? Because obviously the algorithms change so often, and this user generated content is great. No, it's not. It's high production. No, it's low production. It has to look like it's made on an iPhone. What's working now?
Well, first of all, everything is working, but it has to all work. You know, everyone used to say, you have to just pick one thing and do it really well, but you have to do a little bit of everything.
Okay.
You know, so for us, podcast ads work really well. Pardon me, but if they don't have, you know, nicer statics to go along with them, podcast ads don't work.
Are they the ones of you been interviewed?
Yeah, me storming
I've
out
seen
the room.
Them. I got hit with them like a lot in the last couple of weeks.
But again, it launched in March and it done really, really well. It fatigued, died off, didn't do much. But then once we introduced a lot more sort of full funnel statics, whether they be, a sale offering or a gift of purchase or just simply the bottle in someone's hand, really, really raw UGC style, then all of a sudden the podcast style comes back to life because it fits a certain part of this funnel, whereas people assume that, well, this funnel doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, it doesn't exist in top of funnel, middle of funnel, bottom of funnel, ad sets, but the ads itself take up that role. So what we find at the minute is we'll have one ad and one video ad that takes all the spend, and it's not the ad itself is not generating any it's running below break even, but the statics are all performing at 3, 4, 5, 6x. You're seeing the podcast ad of me storming out the room, you're going, that's funny. But now all of a sudden when you see our static ad next, you're like, oh, that's the essence of it. Oh, that's the offer.
I get you.
That's the offer. So it's almost like becoming, it's almost like becoming its own landing page in three videos or two videos in a static, because you're scrolling through that content that you're laughing at, or you're going, which all the comments say, why the fuck's he wearing a Hi-Viz? But you see the essence of it.
Yeah.
You maybe don't even know we sell perfume, but the next static ad that says the essence of it,
but it's all part of a bigger plan. Yeah. So it's not just like, oh, there's one ad and that's it. It's you and seeing you again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that Mr. Beast sort of style video is working really well for us. The essence of it, we also did, bad to say now, but Charlie Kirk, his debate style is we've created three or four versions of that, where it's that, 20 people, Charlie Kirk in the middle, and one by one, they say why they don't like President, blah, blah, blah. But we've done that in fragrance form, and it's explosive because it's really, really engaging content. People love an argument. People love seeing drama. But how do you apply that to whatever you're selling? Well, you have to show both sides, So what we'll do then, we'll take all our competitors' one-star reviews, we'll take all of our one-star reviews, all of our five-star reviews. Well, what are the benefits of the essence vault? Don't let us decide that. What are the reviews saying? And it's simply the fact of choice of how many fragrances. It's the fact that they still buy the designer fragrance, but they only wear it at nighttime. They'll use ours to, first of all, find out if they like the designer fragrance, but second of all, they'll buy it to lengthen the use that they have out of the £200 bottle of fragrance. So it's not that they're buying us instead, it's they're buying us as well. It's to
complimentary.
Compliment. Yeah.
That's the best.
And again, that's what's portrayed in the debate style is, the essence of us not destroying the perfume industry, it's helping it.
It's clever.
Which, in my opinion, we are, because in the male market 5 years ago, males didn't buy fragrance. Males got bought fragrance at Christmas and they wore it until it ran out. Until their birthday or the next Christmas. Now they're buying fragrance, because they don't want to spend £200 on something that they don't like.
Mightn't like, yeah.
Yeah.
So you've kind of thrown out a lot of numbers there. Like, what kind of numbers is the Essence Vault doing now in 2025?
Last year we did 47 million, and this year we'll do about 60, mid-60s. As wow. as a group, we'll do, fingers crossed, this year we'll touch 80.
So Eston Falls on his own is doing 60.
Yeah.
That is sensational. Remind people again when you started.
COVID, what's that, five years? 5 years
ago. People are going to be simultaneously sickened and enthused.
Yeah.
That is what's possible.
I really hate sharing revenue numbers because they don't, in my opinion, they don't mean anything. Do you know?
But it's very important. It sets a context of like, and I think a lot of people, that's why I was really impressed with your talk as well. Like, you were very transparent about all this stuff. It frustrates me, especially when you're someone on and you're like, people won't know if you're selling 10 grand or 10 million. Yeah. Like, it's just, there's a weird transparency thing in North and South, like about like, just spit it out. Yeah. Like, it's all available anyway. Like, it's mad when people don't. It's the authentic people like you. People resonate going, yeah, fair play. Totally brilliant. Like, and it's inspiring. It definitely is. Mm-hmm. So then talk to me about the other two brands, like Thomas Carter and Liquid London. Like, what was the thought process behind them?
Again, you know, brands that we've seen, either we came, obviously the frustration with the Eston Falls is fragrance is expensive. Some fragrances we physically can't do at the price point. You know, we can't change the price point because that is what the Eston Falls is. It's, I'm not going to be cheesy and say it's helping everyone be able to buy fragrance. It's not, it's, but that is what the Eston Falls is. It's just being transparent. That's the sole identity of the Eston Falls is cheaper fragrance, you know, but what that then leads to is we can't, you know, the bottle very plain, the label's very plain, packaging's very plain, because all of our effort has to go into the fragrance because that's what that consumer wants. But for me, that same gap was in the high-end niche luxury market where you buy a bottle of 200 quid perfume, you know, and you still get it in a box similar to the Eston Falls. But hang on a minute, you've got 200 quid to play with here. I know that bottle, I know that fragrance doesn't cost any more than tenner. You know, so you've got 190 quid of profit here that I know you're making because I know how to make fragrance. But why are you not giving that customer a better experience? You know, so that's where Thompson Carter came, where it's like people also buy fragrance for the experience of the unboxing, you know, the bottle, how it sits on the shelf, how it smells, of course, as well. But all of that, we were able to, with Thompson Carter, extrapolate everything, improve it side by side. The fragrance is better. Fragrance is better than anything under 100 quid or 200 quid, hands down. The packaging is better than anything up to 500 quid. You know, instead of using void fill, we use a cotton pillow. You know, it's then we touches, it's like how, if I want to buy something that I want to feel like it's a treat, you know, I don't get that in a plain brown box with brown paper void fill and a bubble wrapped cardboard paper box.
Functional.
You know, it's functional, you know, but not 200 quid functional. Mm. It's 20 quid functional. Why do I have to pay 200 quid just to be able to say I wear that brand? You know, whereas Thompson Carter is both. It's fragrances that, you know, very, very strong. They last all day, but the unboxing experience is massive. They can put it on their socials. They can be proud of it. They're like, oh my God, look,
clever.
A fucking pillow. You know, who does a pillow? But, you know, there's it ties back to fragrance. Egyptian women, Egyptians were obviously the first people to, fragrance wearers. Egyptian ladies would have put their jewelry on a mini pillow on their nightstand. And that was, we thought, all right, that's good. I don't want to use void fill. That helps that.
That's cool.
It's a lot dearer than void fill as well, you know, but, that whole experience just was what we wanted to put together for Thompson Carter.
So it's super high end. So you've catered to both sides of the market there. And then Liquid London?
Liquid London is, it's actually a bit of fun with TikTok. So we looked at TikTok, obviously, as the, what's this? We launched it in October 2023. We thought, how do we make a brand that stops to scroll on TikTok where everything's colorful, it's playful? How do we take the market first and create a brand around where we want to market it? You know, so that's where the branding's controversial. The label, the logo, it's an LSD tab. You know, the logo is that's what it's designed as.
Okay.
The colors of the boxes are all, you know, rainbow elements, really playful, and the fragrance has a pheromone enhancing twinge to it, where we use chemical called Isoe Super. You know, when you spray that on your skin, it changes slightly to you. So if you wear it, it's unique to yourself.
Ah, so it's a customized fragrance.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Amazing. So I love the way you've just nailed the niche. You haven't gone off in these different directions. I know you did skincare, but you've nailed that niche. You're like, we are going to own fragrance. It's a huge lesson there. Like, I think that's class.
Well, our next brand's not fragrance, but it's sleep. So we're brand should be launching the next month. Dream Team. Dream Team wasn't trademark, was taken
for it. That's a tough one.
Dream Team. So it'll be, again, using ourselves as the ICP. It's like, right, well, how do I improve my sleep, right? So mouth tape, your nose strips, your magnesium supplement, you know, whereas the supplement itself, I would watch quite a lot of Andrew Huberman podcasts, you know, when he goes through the full sleep stack, it's like 8 tablets, you know, and I'm like, fuck, I'm not taking 8 tablets every night.
Yeah, it's costly, it's a lot to remember, whereas so it's like just one package.
Send it to a supplier, get that into a tablet, 2 tablets. So that's samples arrived last week, and using it, absolutely brilliant. Sleep score's never been better on the whoop.
Another whoop.
Mouth tape, again, a little bit of stubble, no mouth tape sticks.
Yeah.
Do you know, so I was fixing that. Same with nose strips. I've got the oiliest nose on planet Earth. I've never put a nose strip on and it stay till the next morning. You know, so it's fixing them wee things. Right. And then launching the brand, because I know I'm the ICP. It's like, I know this nose strip will suit an oily skin. I know the mouth tape will suit a beard. You know, so now all of a sudden.
Yeah, so those little things, like I've tried the same. Yeah, I use nose strips all the time now. I tried mouth tape, didn't work because exactly the reason you said.
Yeah.
Okay, quick fire round time. What book has the most impact on you?
I can tell you how many books I start, but I don't know how many I finish. Black Box Thinking by Matthew Saeed.
Yes.
Probably one of the only books I've finished, but I'll tell you about 50 books, but definitely the only one I've read 3 times, 4 times.
It's a strong recommendation, Black Box Thinking.
It's honestly, it's every page you've got a new, a little nugget, a little, you know, light bulb moment of, shit, like that makes so much sense. You know, obviously black box airplanes, so it takes that analogy and applies it to different sectors, different markets, you know, compares the medical market to the market of airplanes, and there's been no bigger efficiency and error rate drops than aerospace, you know, where that black box contains all of the errors, all of the faults, you know, who's fucked up, who's done it wrong, you know, and that's fucking up is such a negative connotation around it, and it's like no, because if you fuck up and you realize you've done that, then boom,
you don't do it again,
you don't, not so much you don't do it again, but now you know how we fix this. Do you know, and we apply, I personally try and apply that everywhere. So everywhere it's like, right, well, how could I have changed that, how could I have done that, why did I let that happen, you know, if such and such has done that incorrect, it's like, right, well, I haven't taught them better, or if I have, you know, how do we fix it that way? You know, always has to be able to, we have to find a fault to be able to make it better. You know,
what's your superpower?
What's my superpower? I like to think I don't have any. So I want other entrepreneurs, younger ones, to be able to look at our businesses and me and think, I can do that. Do you know, and I think if you try and say that you've got all of these, you know, that this is why it's because I wake up at 5 o'clock and I go to the gym, and it creates that buyer identity, really. Do you know, and I think so many, it looks very, very hard now, but it's literally just, it's time compounding. Do you know, it's 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and that's how we ended up today. It wasn't, you know, we got pretty lucky with COVID, but we worked like our fucking balls off to get lucky, to be able to take opportunity. But anyone can do that.
What daily habit is the biggest secret to your success?
Well, don't wake up at 5 o'clock, put it that way.
As I was about to ask that, I was like, it's probably a bad question.
Again, no real one. I think one, a person that works for me is buy yourself a really expensive pen. I think I take great pride in writing a to-do list every day. It never gets finished. But I think just that, again, similar to the sheets, it's that sort of, if I write it down on paper, it's almost half finished in my head, you know, and I find myself veering off it, not finishing it, but more gets finished. And by chance, the most important things get finished. But yeah, Karen DeArch pens, definitely pronounced that wrong, but that's my choice.
I give you 1 million euro or pounds. You can invest in one company, one person. Who is it?
Ooh. I think in general, I like to call them like version 2 dropshippers. I think there is no better group that have everything locked down so much where, you know, there's a guy I've been quite friendly with over the last sort of 6 months, you know, still has a few freelancers. You know, he's growing a supplement business, 25% profits every day, subscription, 70% take rate. You know, if you go to a VC, they'll bite your hand off for a 12-month CAC to LTV, where he's doing 25% in his first order. It's mind-blowing. One person, probably be Lucy McLeod from Hair Syrup. She, a TikTok shop brand, Hair Syrup. Again, ICP was her, you know, trying to improve her own hair, hair growth and stuff through rosehip oil. I'm not sure. As you can see, my hairline, I don't use it myself. But her sort of, in my opinion, is the pinnacle of that sort of TikTok shop brand, where it's actually an insult to say it's just a TikTok shop brand now. You know, went on to Dragon's Den, went away with no offer, and has used it and grew this massive business, and looks like she's having fun doing it, which I really commend.
What do you believe that other people find weird or strongly disagree with?
I think people overestimate AI. I think it's very, very important. I use it every day, spend a lot of time on it. We run a lot of systems through it. But in my opinion, today's the strongest AI is ever going to be, because AI is basically a massive research tool for everything. But what AI is also doing is, in a year's time, 2 years time, it's going to be using its own, it's going to be using AI learnings to teach it. And then it's going to, you know, it's then going to become AGI human. But it's, you know, I think the cleanest data available today is today. You know, tomorrow it's going to get dirtier and more wrong, you know, and yeah, I don't think we're going to work for robots, put it that way.
If you were starting again in 2025, what would you build?
I don't think the year matters. I think just something that I'm the first user. So I'm the first user. Doesn't matter what industry it's in, you're the first user. If you're the first user of something, and again, Virgil Abloh, 3% different. Oh, some, you just have to improve something by 3%, change something by 3%, launch it. You know, you don't need to recreate the wheel. I actually recommend not recreating the wheel, because then all of a sudden you have to create awareness for your product from the very, very top. People aren't aware of this issue. If I've got an issue, if I can't wear nose strips because my oil's too oily, I'm not the only person with an oily nose. You know, I know I'm not the only customer for that. All of a sudden, the awareness, I'm aware I can't wear a nose strip. The second I see a brand that say, oh, that use this nose strip, it's not the adhesive, it's the length of the ends that stop it from coming off. I'm like, mad. Bye. Done. You know?
What's been your worst investment?
Worst investment? Other D2C brands. I've invested money into the different brands, and they've either closed or aren't the guaranteed investment they thought.
There's experiments. What's been your best investment?
Having kids. I think another daily must for me is I need to be home before bedtime to know. So I'm home at least 90% of bedtimes. Still get to spend at least an hour and a half, 2 hours with the boys and, you know, put them to bed. And I think a lot of, especially definitely me, I sort of said to myself, I don't want kids yet, you know, but then when is yet? You know, I was like, no, I'm too busy. But believe me, there's no bigger efficiency hack than having kids. It makes you extremely efficient.
I love that answer. Final question.
But don't try and have three kids. That's fucking nuts.
You've packed it all into a very short space of time. You have the same velocity in everything in life. I'm learning that from getting to know you. Final question. What's the best bit of advice you've gotten or given in the last 12 months?
Best bit of advice goes completely against what I've just said, but most problems that you have in business can be solved with an extra 2 hours a day. Go in an hour earlier, leave an hour later. Time solves most problems. Compounding, people overestimate what they can do in a week, underestimate what they can do in a year. I think that's massive. Time solves most things.
Love it. Connor, that was unbelievably illuminating. People are going to be buzzed by this episode. Where can people learn more about you and the group and Essence Vault?
Websites and Instagram. I don't know my Instagram handle, so you have to put it in the
I'll tag you. I'll share a story and tag you. It's the Essence Vault chat group. Connor, that was a pleasure.
Thank you.